answering your questions about matters of the head, heart, and health. This is Gut Feelings with Lo Bosworth.
Hello, hello. Welcome to your brand new episode of Gut Feelings, your go-to podcast for advice on matters of the head, heart, and health. I am your host, Lo Bosworth, the founder of women's wellness brand, Love Wellness. You can find us at Walmart in digestive health, Target in natural beauty and women's OTC, Ulta in bath, on Amazon, and of course at lovewellness.com. On this show, we answer your head, heart, and health advice questions like your best friend would. We're all about building an open community here, so if you have a particularly tough or awkward question for us, that's okay, ask away. As you may know, tough and awkward is what we do best at Love Wellness. So with that, let's dive into your questions and today's guest. Everyone on the show today, I am very excited because it is all about gut health, because we have board-certified gastroenterologist and New York Times best-selling author, Dr. Will Bolsiewicz on the show, better known as Dr. B on Instagram. He's also the founder of 38 Terra, and he's a medical advisor for Zoe. So he's coming on the show today, and we got so many gut health questions because gut health is the topic today, that I'm just kind of throwing the typical format of head, heart health out the window just to jump right into gut health as a broader topic, because I'm so fascinated by this and I know that you guys are too. So let's just get into the episode. All right, Dr. B, I'm so excited to have you on Gut Feelings today. You cannot imagine how many questions we got for the good doctor. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. I have to imagine when the show is titled Gut Feelings and you're talking to a gut health doctor, it sets it up for a lot to discuss, right?
Yes, we got a lot of audience questions, and I asked internally at the Love Wellness office on our Slack this morning, what gut health questions do you guys have for Dr. B? I got like 15 questions from the team. So before we jump in, just give listeners your brief background. You're a board-certified gastroenterologist. You have an incredible social media presence. I love following you, and I read that thing about miso a few weeks ago, and my mind was blown about miso and radiology or radiation. So you just are such an expert in the gut health arena in the field, and we love Gut Health at Love Wellness. So please tell us about your expertise.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's great to be here. And my background, so this is not what I planned to happen with my life. It just kind of did happen. My dream was to be a doctor, and I became a gastroenterologist, and I was in practice taking care of patients. But along that journey, something happened to me that completely transformed my life, which is that I became the person who was sick and I needed help. And I had gut issues, and those gut issues affected my entire body more than just digestion and bloating. I mean, it was like far reaching.
Same.
Exactly. Brain and mood and energy, and there's so much. So there I was in a dark place. And in that moment, when I needed help and I was the patient, I didn't want what I was actually trained to do at great, amazing institutions. Institutions that I'm very proud of. Vanderbilt, Georgetown, Northwestern, the University of North Carolina. Those are my schools. But I didn't want what I was trained to do. I wanted something more holistic. And what I discovered was that changing my diet completely and radically transformed my health. And when that happens, as a medical doctor who's very passionate about my work, I had no choice. I had to bring this into the clinic, even if the system doesn't support this, no matter what. This is something that I had to offer to my patients. And so I became, this was a little over 10 years ago, but basically I became completely obsessed with working all day and then going home at night and reading about gut health, the gut microbiome, nutrition. And I would bring these ideas into the clinic the next day with my patients. And I was watching these people have their own independent, miraculous, amazing transformations, whether it be irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, acid reflux, whatever it may be. And it got to a point where I felt compelled to do something that felt extremely unnatural for me, because I don't really like social media, to be completely honest with you. And it probably comes across at times that I'm just not a huge fan of it. And
you're good at it.
I'm okay. It's a complex thing. We're not here to talk about that. But the bottom line, though, is that I felt compelled to share this story of what was happening in my clinic one-on-one behind closed doors. It wasn't enough to treat hundreds or thousands of patients. I wanted to get this message out to the world. And that initiated a snowball that started off very slow, but started to grow. And eventually it grew into me coming on shows like this and being the guest. And then eventually a book deal. And that book came out in 2020 in the middle of the pandemic. I didn't think anything would happen. And it blew up. And now here I am, and I wear many different hats. And one of them that I'm quite proud of is that I'm the U.S. medical director of a personalized nutrition company called Zoe. And we are running the largest nutritional sciences study out there. And we also have the largest database of microbiome samples out there. So we're doing a lot of cool stuff. So anyway, that's my background, is just this progression of events that leads me to a place where it's really kind of fun and cool that I can take the concepts that I was applying to helping patients and the research and the things that I've learned and try to get this out to the masses for free.
Yeah, I love that. Well, we're really excited to have you on the show. And anyone that listens to the Gut Feelings podcast knows that Love Wellness is really focused on gut health, is really the foundation for women's health. We know that gut health and vaginal health are connected, gut health and hormonal health. And so we're really excited to have you on the show. I'm so curious, before we get into a very long list of questions, because I told you before we started recording, we got so many questions for this episode. I'm curious if you can speak to, because I think it's really interesting when it comes to gut health specifically and all of the research that has come out about gut health, microbiomes. It's a developing field. And I'm curious as to your opinion on the switch from, I don't want to say traditional medicine or doctoring, to a more holistic approach within your practice, but and I'll give you an example, and hopefully like you can help explain this to our listeners. We make great vaginal probiotics. And I was on some university's website yesterday reading about vaginal probiotics, because we're always doing research. And it says, well, it has been suggested that probiotics can help support vaginal health through the gut, da, 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 but there's no good evidence of this. And that stuff frustrates me to no end, because I feel like there is good clinical research out there. There has been good studies about the microbiome done at this point. And there is tremendous amounts of anecdotal information out there that I think is helping to guide patients towards living their best life when it comes to gut health. And so if you just are a typical person learning about gut health and the microbiome and probiotics, how should you feel about this subject matter when your doctor maybe is giving you great advice, but then you go on a website and it's like, oh, but there's no research that proves this to be true? It frustrates me to no end. So I'd like you to address that.
Yeah. This is a huge issue that goes far beyond health information or gut health or anything of this variety. I mean, this is really a question of like, how do you access reliable sources of information in the 21st century?
Yeah.
Whether it be politics or whatever it may be, it's complicated. It's really hard. So I think ultimately you have to find those sources of truth that you really sincerely believe in and then lean into that. And don't believe everything that you hear on the internet. I think that we're sort of preconditioned in many ways to believe what we hear that's out there. And that's where it can become very confusing for people when you hear diametrically opposed opinions on the exact same topic, and both people are medical doctors. What the heck are you supposed to believe?
I don't know.
Yeah. And so to me, I don't know that I have a clear, simple answer. What I do know is that this is why I exist in a way, because I'm here to have these conversations. And I can tell you from my side, and I hope this comes across to the listeners, that I authentically care about getting this right. And I may not always get it right. I may be wrong at times, but I'm doing my best to try to relay that information that I really believe to be the truth without those biases or some specific agenda that I'm trying to accomplish. That's, to me, the direction that we should be trying to go. But I think that it starts with something that requires effort, which isn't easy. Like, it's easier to just listen.
Totally.
It's harder to take a moment to pause and say, who is my source of truth that I'm actually going to lean into and believe in? And the other thing I want to say real quick to what you just mentioned, well, is yes, there is science. Yes, I believe in science and I have published many papers. That being said, there is no one size fits all. And we have to ultimately find what works for us. And even in clinical trials, and I don't want to spend 10 minutes unpacking this concept because it's going to get us away from gut health, yeah. Which is what we're here to talk about. But even in clinical trials where you, for example, hypothetically, we pit a plant-based diet against a ketogenic diet, we might declare a winner based upon the clinical trial. But the idea there is what works better on a population level. That doesn't speak to what works on the individual level. And there are some people who do better, completely hypothetical. Let's pretend the plant-based diet does better than the ketogenic diet. There's definitely people in that trial who did better on a ketogenic diet than they did on a plant-based diet. And you can't tell them that they should go and force the plant-based diet when they did better on the ketogenic diet. So when it comes to these things like supplements, probiotics, diet, we should have something that we're paying attention to that's our measure. So if it's a vaginal probiotic, what is the measure of vaginal health, that you can notice a difference. Because when it comes to gut health, if you're taking a gut health supplement or a probiotic, for example, if you notice a change in your bowel movements and they become more healthy, what are we going to argue here?
What evidence do you need?
Yeah. You've just demonstrated. That's the outcome.
Yeah. Just because Harvard hasn't published a clinical study of it doesn't necessarily mean that what you are doing for yourself is not benefiting you if you are directly experiencing the benefits of said thing, like increasing fiber.
Yeah, 110%. And the other thing too, Lo, is that you have to understand that supplements, there's no supplements that have phase 3 clinical trials in the way that the big pharmaceutical companies will do for their drugs, because they have to.
Yeah, well, also because it's completely cost prohibitive for consumer-facing companies to do clinical research at that level. It's so expensive. I don't think people understand.
No one has the money to do that.
Yeah, to do a drug trial costs billions of dollars and can take 20 years to get something approved, just to like really put it in context for listeners.
Yes. And so the issue, though, is that for many of these studies where they say, oh, the evidence is not there, what they're actually referring to, if you were to dig into the details, is that they're applying the standards of what is required for a pharmaceutical drug. And this is true for all probiotics. And it drives me nuts, because I've had so many patients that I have treated with probiotics. I'm not saying that probiotics are the solution for every problem for every person, but I've had so many patients that I've treated with probiotics with tremendous life-changing success. And the evidence says it's weak. It's weak because they haven't done a phase 3 clinical trial, which again costs like at least tens of millions of dollars.
That right there, that's what I was looking for. All right, listeners. So suffice to say, you need to do your own research and you need to figure it out on your own to a certain degree. I think everybody is different. Everyone, please listen. I have incredibly major news. So you have known and loved our Bye Bye Bloat supplement for years. And now I am so excited to announce the launch of Bye Bye Bloat Body Care. We worked with doctors and naturopaths to develop 3 brand new Bye Bye Bloat products to help you depuff and sculpt from the inside out by bringing spa-level lymphatic massage home. So the new 4-step depuff and sculpt routine includes our best-selling Bye Bye Bloat supplement and our new firming clay body mask, new detoxifying body oil, and new lymphatic massage roller to get your lymphatic system flowing and help get rid of excess water retention, all for less than $3 per massage. You know, if you go to the spa, it costs like way, way more. So you can shop them all now at lovewellness.com. I cannot wait for you to try Bye Bye Bloat Body Care. Okay, now we can jump into our gut health questions. But I always like to ask experts when they come on the show about sticky topics like that, that I think in your position, you understand really well, to help make the information gap smaller when it comes to those kinds of things. So the first question I have is actually a personal question that I have, me to you. And it's about antibiotics, because I read something recently that a single course of antibiotics, and I just took an antibiotic like a month ago, a single course of antibiotics can alter your gut microbiome, the diversity of the bacteria that are there, for up to many years after a single round of antibiotics that you take to treat some infection within your body. And so I'm curious what you think when I say that. And also, do you think that that's true? And I just want to talk about antibiotics and the gut microbiome in general, because I have significantly upped the number of probiotics I've been taking since I took that antibiotic. But I have a ton of questions about antibiotics and probiotics and gut health, right? Like, if you're taking an antibiotic, should you also actively be taking a probiotic at the same time? Does that antibiotic kill all the good bacteria in your microbiome on a day-over-day basis? What should people be doing generally when they take an antibiotic? Because I think that there's fear around antibiotics now when it comes to gut health.
Yeah, let's dig into this. So first of all, antibiotics are probably the best thing to happen to modern healthcare. We probably individually have an extra 10, 15, 20 years because we're not dying of infections. And if you went back to the 1900, the top 3 causes of death were all infections. So clearly this has been transformative. The problem is that the pendulum has swung in a direction that's too far. It's the overutilization of antibiotics. It's using antibiotics when we don't need to be using antibiotics. That is really quite problematic, because there are consequences to antibiotic use. And the main place where we see those consequences is in the gut microbiome, which of course affects our entire body. Now, what is happening when you take an antibiotic? It depends on which one, how strong, how long you're taking it. But what people need to understand is there's no such thing as a precise antibiotic with no effect on other microbes. And we're hoping that we blast the bad guys more than we blast the good guys, but we're blasting the good guys too. This is not a laser focus. This is something that ultimately becomes problematic because particularly if people are exposed to repeated course of antibiotics, it starts to really shape the microbiome in a way where you'll never actually be able to completely walk that back and go back to where you were before.
Even with the use of probiotics.
Even with the use of probiotics.
In tandem with that antibiotic.
Let's picture this for a quick moment, Mo. Let's pretend you're about to take a course of antibiotics. There are microbes that exist within your gut that because you take that antibiotic, they're not going to survive. There are microbes that exist that will survive. On the ones that do survive, some of them are what we call antibiotic resistant. And so we have selected for those specific microbes. And now they will multiply and they will grow and they will be more dominantly present in your microbiome moving forward. So this is a dramatic shift that's taken place. The ones that we just destroyed, they will grow back for the most part, with the exception of very, very strong antibiotics. The microbes, they get suppressed, but they don't get completely eradicated. They will grow back. But the issue is recalibrating back to where you were before, even with a probiotic. That's a hard question because we've caused a shift towards these ones that are resistant no matter what. They're already there.
Interesting.
Anyway, so I think that the answer to this question is really at the end of the day, number one, when you are being prescribed an antibiotic, have the courage to actually ask questions. So don't just take it at face value. So what happens if I don't take this antibiotic? Why do I need to take this antibiotic? And in that moment, advocating for yourself can hopefully allow us to avoid unnecessary antibiotic use because they estimate, well, that 70% of the antibiotics that are prescribed are unnecessary. If you need the antibiotic, what do? We double down on the concepts that we know work in terms of supporting and empowering our gut microbes. So there are studies that exist in terms of a high fiber diet. There is now more recently research on fiber supplements that indicate that they're beneficial. We want to avoid the things that are toxic to our microbes. So that is not the time for heavy alcohol consumption, for lots of sugar and candy, and for destroying our sleep. Like we want to sleep, we want to exercise, we want to be gentle on our gut, give it at least 2, preferably 4 weeks of really sort of nurturing and protecting. When it comes to probiotics, it's an interesting question because there was a study that came out of the Weizmann Institute in Israel, where they actually found that taking probiotics slows the recovery of the microbiome.
Really?
Yeah. That being said, after that study came out, there were probiotics that I continued to recommend to my patients, particularly if they have a history of an infection called C. diff. This bacteria called C. diff happens after antibiotics, and it's quite catastrophic when it happens. So there are probiotics that we can take that would protect us, and they're justified within that context. So probiotics with antibiotics, I favor food and fiber and sleep and exercise. And for some people, probiotics, but not necessarily probiotics for all.
Okay, that's really, really helpful. I want to dig into the fiber piece of that because I think that a lot of people think about probiotics as the Band-Aid solution now to antibiotics. And I'm very curious for you to go deeper specifically on what fiber does in the body, how fiber actually supports your microbiome, because I know lots of good things about fiber and what it does. But I'd love for you, because you are the expert here, to tell us all about fiber. First, can you tell us how many Americans are getting enough fiber in their diet every single day?
About 1 in 20. Yeah. And that's not me.
That's crazy.
Yes.
Doctor, are you getting enough fiber in your diet every single day?
I mean, I think I'm getting enough fiber, but I wasn't for 80% of my life up to where I am today. I was not. I was eating mostly a junk food diet. So I'm certainly not here to judge. The statistics, like the 5%, 1 in 20 people, that's not being over the top. That's actually the accurate statistic. And it's quite disturbing. So the average woman in the United States is getting about 15 grams of fiber per day. She should be getting at least 25 grams of fiber per day, at least. The average man in the United States is slightly north of where women are, 18 grams, but men, we also consume more calories on average because most men are a little bit larger. And we should be getting 38 grams of fiber. So we're even more fiber deficient than women are. So we're not in a good place.
Gals are doing better than the boys.
All the time. All the time. That's an entire conversation. But nonetheless, the issue is we're way deficient in fiber. And This is problematic when we're talking about supporting our gut microbes because fiber has been mispackaged, misrepresented, and frankly needs like a new PR agent.
Agree completely.
Everyone thinks fiber is so boring. They think it's this orange drink that grandmas have so they can poop. We need to redefine this. Fiber is sexy and really exciting because of this new science that has emerged just in the last 10 years, showing us that when we consume fiber, by the way, fiber, you can get it in a supplement. You can also get it in your diet by eating more plants. So all plant foods contain fiber, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, seeds, nuts, and legumes. The thing about fiber is most of us believe, I mean, I even believe this after medical school, fiber is just like this thing that sweeps through us and comes out the other end as a bowel movement. And yes, there is some truth to this, but actually there's this aspect to it that's really cool, which is that fiber gets down to our colon because we as humans don't have the ability to process and digest fiber. We lack the enzymes, but our microbiome has these enzymes, literally tens of thousands of special enzymes that they have for the purpose of unlocking nutrition that exists in fiber. So when the fiber enters into the colon where these microbes live, they get into a feeding frenzy. And they basically unpack the fiber and it stops being fiber. It's this magical thing. And it transforms into this thing called short-chain fatty acids, butyrate, acetate, and propionate. And the short-chain fatty acids are the most anti-inflammatory thing that I have come across in more than 20 years of studying medicine.
Really? That's so interesting. What does that mean? Because I knew that fiber was a food source for bacteria, but like you're blowing my mind right now on the anti-inflammatory benefits. Please tell us more.
Okay, so this butyrate, acetate, propionate, if you dig into the medical literature that's out there, you're going to find a bazillion papers. And every single time you read about this, you have to understand, we're talking about fiber. Boring old fiber is having this amazing benefit where it starts right there in the gut. So if we're talking about the microbes, we want to support the good guys. That's what's happening. You want to suppress the bad guys like E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella. Short-chain fatty acids, that's what they do. You want to repair the gut barrier, fix leaky gut. Guess what the best thing is out there to repair the gut barrier and fix leaky gut? Short-chain fatty acids.
Fiber?
Yes. Short-chain fatty acids,
okay.
That we get from fiber, right? You want to improve your immune system. You want to shape your immune system, make it targeted, make it strong. Not make it over the top, because over the top is allergic or autoimmune. Not make it inadequate, because inadequate means other things like infections. We want it to be targeted and strong. Fiber and short-chain fatty acids are exactly what allow us to do that. But it's not just these things. It actually spreads throughout our entire body. You want to talk about insulin sensitivity, insulin resistance, blood sugar control. It's the short-chain fatty acids that matter. You want to talk about your metabolism, burning fat. It's the short-chain fatty acids that matter. You want to talk about feeling full. It's the short-chain fatty acids that matter. We want to talk about the new drugs, Ozempic, like GLP-1 agonists. Guess what causes GLP-1 to naturally be released in the body? The short-chain fatty acids. This is why fiber is so satiated. It makes you feel full. We want to talk about brain health or the blood-brain barrier. So the blood-brain barrier is just like the gut barrier.
The BBB.
The BBB is repaired by short-chain fatty acids. People who have brain fog. I'm quite convinced the issue is not leaky gut, it's leaky brain. And we could fix that. So I could go head to toe. We could talk all day. But the bottom line is that if you pick a spot in the body and you ask me, how does fiber work? The answer is short-chain fatty acids. And if you want to know what the benefits are, well, I feel compelled to share my favorite study of all time. Is that okay?
Please do.
Okay, real quick. This is a compilation of all of the available data. So there's no bias being pulled into this. They're not just cherry picking the good studies. They're taking all the studies and then asking the question, what are the benefits of consuming more fiber? And here's what they found. People who consume more fiber, they live longer. They're less likely to have a heart attack. They're less likely to die of heart disease. That's, by the way, the number one killer in the United States. They're less likely to be diagnosed with multiple forms of cancer that include colon cancer, esophageal cancer, and notably breast cancer. They're less likely to die of cancer. They're less likely to have a stroke. They're less likely to be diagnosed with diabetes. In clinical trials, human clinical trials of dietary fiber, people who consume more dietary fiber lose weight, have lower blood pressure, have lower cholesterol. And this is the reason why we get many of those benefits. And when people ask, why would fiber do all of these things? The answer to that question is because your gut microbes, because your gut releases short-chain fatty acids, you get healing benefits throughout the entire body. Mic drop.
That's very interesting.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, I mean, So we all need to be eating more fruits and vegetables. I mean, this is really, really interesting because I think that fiber, to your point, needs a better publicist because it's very interesting having this conversation. And I really think about fiber through the benefits of digestion, right? Improving digestion. You're over here saying that fiber really is responsible for, I think, a lot of the benefits that people believe they get from probiotics, but really maybe it's a compilation of both, or fiber is even better at doing these things from an anti-inflammatory perspective throughout the body than the addition of this good bacteria or, I don't know, dietary changes or whatever. But you're coming in hot on fiber, and I love it.
I'm coming in super hot on fiber. I can't help it. But the thing is, let's think about it this way. Just to use a quick analogy, we want our gut microbes to prepare a delicious meal. That delicious meal are going to be the postbiotics, like short-chain fatty acids. That's what actually has the benefits throughout our body, okay? In order to prepare that delicious meal, what do we need? We need a great chef. The chef is the probiotic. Those microbes are the ones who are doing the cooking for us. But a chef is worthless if you don't provide them with the ingredients that they need to make the meal. The ingredients that we need to make the meal come from our diet, and fiber should be the centerpiece.
I love that. What's your favorite fiber-forward meal?
I'm going to keep it super simple, and I think almost everyone will agree with me on this one. Avocado toast. Avocado toast on a nice sourdough. You just like, how do you beat that? And by the way, a couple quick things on the avocado toast. So I personally love, first of all, sourdough bread. And then I love a little extra virgin olive oil, which by the way, is so good for the gut. Absolutely. And some balsamic vinegar. So I start there, a little bit of balsamic, a little bit of EVOO, get my avocado toast on there. And then it's just a question of what spices.
How many grams of fiber are in one whole avocado? Do you know off the top of your head?
It's like a shocking amount. It's 10 to 12 grams of fiber on one avocado. Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. You're not even trying.
Yeah, right. Everybody loves avocado toast, or most people love avocado toast. I can't do a blanket statement on everybody because...
There would be someone out there, but they might have an avocado allergy. They're like the least controversial food out there. Almost everyone loves an avocado.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, my next question is about allergies. So somebody who wrote into us says that she has suffered from what she thinks is constant allergies, headaches, congestion. She thinks she's allergic to one of her pets. And she is thinking about a doctor who's thinking she may be histamine intolerant. So first, can you tell us what that means? What does it mean to be histamine intolerant? And then she knows that there are some connections between gut health and histamine intolerance. I don't know anything about that. So can you shed some light on that? Because she seems to know more than I know about this. And you are going to know absolutely the most out of the connection between histamine intolerance and gut health.
Yes. Happy to talk about this. I wrote a book, my second book, The Fiber Fields Cookbook. I'm actually super proud because it had an entire protocol and education around histamine intolerance in there. So it's a topic that I'm trying to shed light on. And actually, I had a podcast episode that I did recently on the Zoe podcast on this topic. So histamine intolerance versus food allergies are not the same thing.
Oh, they're not the same thing.
They're not, but they can present the same way. So it can be very confusing to a person.
Interesting.
Because you might eat a food and you might get a rash, runny nose, a headache, a migraine, rapid heartbeat, lightheadedness, and gut symptoms like bloating. Bloating is actually extremely common. You can get all of those things and think that it's a food allergy and it's actually histamine intolerance. So it's important for people who are listening, our listeners today, to understand about this possibility. If you've been experienced in these types of systemic type symptoms, like throughout your entire body, and you're trying to piece it together, because the tricky part is that our healthcare system does not make this easy. You go to the GI doctor for your bloating, you go to the neurologist for your migraine, and they're focusing on those individual issues, but who's connecting the dots? It has to be you. You have to see that there's this bigger picture. So a food allergy is when our immune system gets activated in response to some sort of protein in our food. And there's specific foods that are classic for food allergies. So fish, shellfish, eggs, dairy, wheat and gluten-containing foods, corn, soy, sesame, peanuts, and tree nuts.
So there's different proteins in these different foods that are sort of the classic food allergy.
Yeah. And so the thing about it is that our immune system is conditioned to respond to things that it considers to be a threat. when we have an allergy, it's activation of our immune system in response to something that's foreign to our body. This is what makes it an allergy as opposed to autoimmune. So it's something that's foreign to our body, but our immune system gets activated and basically goes on the attack. It feels threatened. It thinks it needs to go out and get it. So the problem is these are the foods that classically a person will have a food allergy to. The problem with food allergies is that they can be quite dangerous. This is why peanuts are not on airplanes anymore, because you may not even consume a bag of peanuts. That person who has that super sensitive peanut allergy may literally touch where peanuts were and put their hand to their mouth, and that could trigger an allergy. So there's no amount of those proteins that is truly safe for a person that has a food allergy. Any amount will trigger those symptoms, which is different from a food intolerance. A food intolerance is not manifest because of activation of the immune system in response to a protein. And there's different types of food intolerances. This is an entire topic, but histamine intolerance is one of them.
So is a histamine intolerance a food intolerance, or they're not the same thing?
It is, because it's triggered by food. So histamine intolerance is triggered by food, which makes it a little bit different. Not to get too crazy with some of the other stuff, but there's things out there like mast cell activation syndrome that are different conditions. They're not the same as histamine intolerance. But in histamine intolerance, the consumption of food triggers these symptoms. Now, histamine is, first of all, part of our body. I have histamine right now in my body, so do you. And that's perfect and healthy when it's in balance. But for some of us, it can get out of control. And particularly if you have gut issues, if you have a damaged gut, then histamine in your diet can trigger these things that, again, like just kind of going top to bottom, headache, runny nose, sinus issues, sore throat, cough, rapid heartbeat, lightheadedness, weakness, fatigue, bloating, and other digestive symptoms, skin issues, rashes. Okay, so what are high histamine foods? Histamine actually comes from the microbes.
Histamine comes from the microbes. In a food?
Yes, in a food, because food has microbes.
That makes sense.
Microbes are everywhere.
Right, okay.
When our food spoils, there's a life cycle to our food. So sure. When our food spoils, it's the microbes that did that.
Interesting, okay. So histamine is not a protein.
No, histamine is something that naturally occurs in our body, but it can also be produced by microbes. The classic thing is fish or fermented foods. All fermented foods are high histamine. All of them. And the reason why is because the microbes are producing histamine. There's also some high histamine plant foods. So sadly, I mentioned avocado toast. I said, everyone loves avocado toast. And you checked me on that appropriately, because here we are now less than 5 minutes later talking about histamine intolerance. And I'm saying avocados actually can cause symptoms for people that have histamine intolerance. So avocados, tomatoes, spinach, and eggplant are sort of the classics.
Okay. And the histamine found in these foods or in our body create that allergy sort of response that we're feeling, right?
Yeah, because histamine that can be a part of our immune system. This is the reason why histamine intolerance can be very similar to a food allergy.
Okay.
Is that when it's a food allergy, histamine gets released by our immune system and you get the runny nose and the headache and these different things, or like a rash or hives. In histamine intolerance, it's that your gut is damaged, you have a leaky gut, and your diet has what could be normal amounts of histamine, but your body can't handle that.
I get it.
And so you have these foods, the fish or fermented food or spinach, eggplant, avocado, tomatoes. You have those foods and now you start to get the runny nose or headache or bloating and gut symptoms. That's histamine intolerance. And the issue is in the gut. It's not that the food is bad food. It's that the issue is in the gut.
Okay, that's interesting. So you may be eating something that for many years, maybe you were fine to eat. You have some gut health episode or incident that has put your gut health in jeopardy. Your gut wall lining is broken or something. You start eating those foods and then you start reacting to it. Are you saying that normally the gut would be able to contain those histamines and so it wouldn't be leaking out into the blood or creating some kind of reaction within the body? But because your gut wall lining or that barrier has been affected to some degree, the thing that you normally could eat now is causing you to have some kind of reaction?
That's exactly what it is. You just nailed it. So imagine we have a medieval castle and you're trying to defend the castle and there's a gaping hole in the wall of the castle. Hard to defend that castle when you got a hole in the wall. Let's repair that wall. How can we repair the wall? You probably know what I'm going to say, but the answer is fiber.
The answer is fiber, friends and listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, I love it. So anybody that is suffering from allergies just generally, but okay, so I have one more question because I want to go a little further down the rabbit hole. What about spring allergies, seasonal allergies? Are we talking about the same thing here? It's not food that I'm ingesting into my body. There's like weird shit flying through the air and that's giving me allergies. Can gut health help to protect against reactions from those things as well?
Yes. But it's a bit of a different topic than histamine intolerance.
Okay.
So, well, what we know is this. Allergic conditions is a overactive response of your immune system against something that it perceives to be a threat. And so in the context of seasonal allergies, you get exposed to pet dander or something from the environment, you know, seasonal. Like I live in Charleston, got tons of flowers. So much seasonal allergies here. The ENTs are very busy. But actually, we could improve the health of our immune system by supporting our gut microbes because your listeners may already know this, but 70% of our immune system lives in our gut. And the closest thing to your gut microbes is your immune system. So anything that sort of passes through the gut will come into contact with your gut microbes and ultimately that will impact your immune system. So when you have a healthy gut, you have a healthy immune system. And when you have seasonal allergies, it's not to sit here and say that people have a radically unhealthy gut. But I do believe that the solution starts with supporting the gut microbes, because when we do that, then we have a more optimized immune system and its ability to do its job.
That's interesting. I have a question that I'm not sure if you're going to know the answer to, but it's a personal question I'm curious about. So right now I'm doing immunotherapy because I have always been a little allergic to dogs. And I got a dog and he's hypoallergenic, but I'm a little more allergic to him than I thought. So I'm doing immunotherapy, like the drops that you put under your tongue. And apparently this has been a very popular practice in Europe for like decades. Do you think that immunotherapy is disruptive to gut health, or could it potentially be disruptive to gut health? Or do you think I'm taking these drops and my gut health is just fine as a result of it?
So there is a way back when we have allergies. There is a way back. And the way back is to teach the body that the thing that it perceives to be a threat is in fact not a threat. The way to do that is not to avoid that specific thing. It's actually to expose to that specific thing. But the exposure needs to be in a very controlled way. That's what the drops are doing. So what you're doing basically is you're conditioning your immune system to be exposed to this without freaking out. The difference is that you have complete control. Where this is different than reducing how much you eat, you have complete and total control of that exposure. And then you can have total control over the escalation of that exposure as well, which is different than saying, like, when it comes to food intolerances, for example, I tell people, start low, go slow. So just reduce how much you're eating of that particular food that's causing trouble. You can do that for a food intolerance. For a food allergy, you need something that's more precise, like what you're doing.
Sure, got it. But doing that is not necessarily disrupting my gut health, exposing the body to those allergens or whatever that I have a problem with.
No, I don't think so. I think it's actually going to make you stronger in the long run, because ultimately what's problematic is when you let inflammation be
out of control inflammation.
Yeah, exactly. Forget it. I'm just going to go for it. And then like you have out of control inflammation in the body that's manifest perhaps as allergies. Well, that's problematic because inflammation has consequences, and those consequences are not just a runny nose. Inflammation in the body, activation of the immune system affects the gut bacteria. This is a two-way street. The gut bacteria are affecting the immune system and the immune system is affecting them. So this is where when you're doing something that's very controlled and not actually causing that inflammation, you're exactly where you want to be.
Everyone, it's time for our last question of the episode. But first, a couple of reminders. First, Bye Bye Blow Body Care is available now. I am so excited. My second reminder is that you can get 50% off your first subscription order and then 25% off for life right now at Love Wellness on any item. So to build a routine that you'll actually love sticking with, snag that lifetime discount at lovewellness.com right now. One last question before we wrap up, Dr. B, and I suspect I know the easy answer to this. Somebody on our team wants to know, what types of tests can you do to determine if you have a healthy gut or not? Are there types of tests or blood work you can do or a stool sample? Or do you really just take stock of your overall health and there you have your answer?
Let me take you into my mind as a gastroenterologist and the way that I'm approaching these issues with patients.
Do you get this question all the time?
Quite a bit. Yeah, quite a bit. I'm glad that I do, because the issue is that there's the emergence of tests all over the place. There's a bazillion tests for a bazillion things. And the question is, It gets back to what we were talking about in the beginning, Lo, which is, where are our sources of truth? Who are we going to trust? Because not everything that gets claimed to be helpful is actually that helpful. That's the problem. So to me, I start with the basics. What I want to look at is, number one, what's your bowel movement look like? You don't have to answer that question. That's not you, but like in general.
I'm like, let's get that for today.
Not to make you blush or anything, but this to me is quite fundamental to understanding our gut health. If I were a cardiologist, I would listen to your heart. As a gastroenterologist, I want to know how you poop. And 60% of the weight of our bowel movement, 60% is the microbes.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, it's not just the excrement of our food.
Wow.
And it reflects our microbiome. So these are important things. I also want to know whether or not you have specific issues that have been tied back to the gut health. It was quite common where I would walk into the room, old school medicine, prior to like tablets and things like this, was the patient's chart was on the door. And you would grab that chart and you would open it up. And I would sit there and I would look, okay, what's their medical history? And what you see is a whole list of issues that could be irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, acid reflux. That's in the digestive system. But let's look at the whole body. And when you're also seeing allergic issues, you're seeing hormonal issues, could be polycystic ovary syndrome, endometriosis, things of this variety. You look at mood and mood disorders or cognitive things. Basically, you look throughout the entire body and you're seeing multiple different conditions that are all tied to dysbiosis, which means damage to the gut microbiome. When you see that, that's quite clear. So to me, this is the foundation where I start is, how are we pooping? How are you feeling? Do you have gut symptoms? And then what is your past medical history? That gets you probably 80 or 90% of the way there. And anyone can do that. Now, there are tests that are extremely expensive that, I have to be honest, I don't mean to be a killjoy, but I don't believe in them.
I thought that was going to be your answer.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I love this answer. I think this is a great answer.
Okay, well, let me unpack it though for a moment. To me, this is what it's about. It's not just about, hey, can I run a test and tell you what your microbes look like? Because the problem with this is, what does that mean?
I don't know.
What does that mean? Exactly. Neither do I. Neither do I. And I've spent the last like 12 years just studying the microbiome, and I still don't know what that means. So what we ultimately need is, we need studies that are actionable. How can we take this information and turn it into something that means something to this individual? Now, I work with a company, I mentioned this in the beginning, called Zoe. I'm their US medical director. We have a gut microbiome test. We are not just a gut microbiome test. We also check people's blood sugar. We check their blood fat levels. But the reason that I'm bringing this up, and the reason why I'm their US medical director, is because I believe in the way that they're doing it, which is that we were running clinical trials before we ever even offered this to the public. And we ran a randomized controlled trial to prove that our product works. So that to me is the level of evidence that I'm looking for, which is that you actually take your product and you show me, not just tell me, show me that you can actually do something that's meaningful to help people. That's what it's about.
Interesting. Do you think that there's good information out there now, just to wrap things up, about what the right kind of biodiversity looks like within a gut microbiome? Or is it different for everybody? Because I'm also assume that, like, if you live in the southern islands of Japan or somewhere with, what is it called, a blue diet, your microbiome is going to look totally different than the microbiome of somebody that lives halfway around the world.
100%. 100%. And I think this is actually a moment to take a step back with awe at the body and how amazing it is. And it is so adaptable and it is so forgiving. And there are many forms of health. There are many forms of wellness and there are many ways to get there. It's not just one path. And that to me is a beautiful thing. And what the microbiome looks like along that path towards health and wellness can be different for different people. So I can't say that there's this one microbiome that illustrates what health is. There are ideas and concepts that we apply. Like, I'm involved in research right now where we're looking at this. But there's ideas and concepts that we apply to try to understand how the gut microbes can inform the choices that we make and lead us to better health outcomes. But there's not just this one thing that, hey, if you have that specific microbiome pattern, you're winning. That's not the way that it works.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Well, I think maybe one of the themes of this episode, which has been so fascinating, is that one size doesn't fit all. And I think we started off talking about that at the very beginning.
And that's a beautiful thing. What I love about this, Lo, is that no matter what you've been through, let me speak for myself. I spent over 30 years eating a junk food diet. I was the guy among my friends that were like, that dude has the worst diet. The worst. Okay, that was me. And it's amazing to know that your gut microbes will forgive you. And you could start change, and that change could start today. And it's not about perfection. It's about one small step in the right direction. And if you keep taking small steps, it's amazing what you can do with your body.
Awesome. I love that. Where can our listeners find you on the internet? Where can they get your book, Fiber Fueled?
Fiber Fueled is my first book.
Okay.
And that's sort of my gut health manifesto for anyone who wants to sort of learn the overview. And then my second book was the Fiber Fueled Cookbook. And that's where I really dig into food intolerances. It's meant to be actually a protocol for food intolerances. So there's histamine intolerance, and then there's also FODMAPs and FODMAP intolerance in there. So those are widely available. You can find them on Amazon. You can find them at Barnes & Noble. You can find them wherever you typically get your books. I'm a big fan of local bookstores because I want them to stay open. So I like to support them when possible. And then you can find me on social media as the Gut Health MD. And for those of you who are interested in learning more about Zoe, you can Google Zoe. You go to joinzoe.com. That's our personalized nutrition company. We also have a podcast, Zoe Science and Nutrition, that I'm a regular.
Awesome. Great. Well, this was an extremely informative episode. I love the subject matter. And it sounds like everybody needs a gastroenterologist in their life as one of their primary care doctors. So we really appreciate your time, Dr. B. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Will. It was a pleasure.
Everyone, what a fascinating episode today. I learned so much about fiber that I didn't know before, understand before, and I'm certainly going to be taking my Sparkle Fiber every single day on a go-forward basis. But thank you to Dr. B for coming on to the show today and getting real with us on so many topics. I also want to thank all of you for listening in and joining me for this episode. If you have any questions for us, email us at gutfeelings@lovewellness.com. You can DM me or Love Wellness, or you can leave your comment on our show's social posts in the comments. If you've liked the show, please don't forget to hit that subscribe button so that you never miss an episode. I'm Leigh Bosworth, and I will see you next time on Gut Feelings.